morning. I am so glad you chose to be here with us today. It is Easter Sunday, my absolute favorite holiday, the day that we have so much to celebrate, the day that it is all about. And with today's sermon, we have so much to cover that I don't even have time to make my annual joke about how Jesus went into the grave. No, I can't do it. Okay, I'll have to just keep rolling. If you want to hear it, you can ask me about it later. All right. We have been in the book of Judges, which means if you're here for Easter Sunday for the first time and you are wondering, why is everything decked out in black? Why do we have swords on the wall? Why do we have shields and darkness everywhere? Because Judges has been an incredibly depressing book as we've watched Israel march down to the depths. And if you were here last week, you heard me say that this week we are going to be talking about a story from the book of Judges, just not from the book of Judges. And that is because we are actually going to be talking about the story of Ruth. Ruth, as we look at chapter 1, starts like this. In the days when the judges ruled, which is this little phrase that jumped out at me as I started prepping for the book of Ruth, 6 months ago now, that I realized, man, I have never seen Ruth in the light of the book of Judges. I had never put these two things together. And as I started studying the book of Ruth, it became very, very apparent that this is significant to understanding the meaning in the book of Ruth. Because this is meant, we'll cover that in a second. It says, in the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. And a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. And the name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife, Naomi. And the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. I am so glad that I only have to say those once. They never get mentioned again. Anyway, we are going to be studying the book of Ruth, and we are going to try to get through the entire book this morning. Obviously, that means we are not going to be going verse by verse through this book. That would take far too long. If you would like to follow along in your own Bibles, the verses will be on the screen. If you're here this morning and you don't have your own copy of the Bible, there are copies in the pews in front of you. If you don't own one at all, feel free to take that as our gift to you. You can take that Bible home with you. But we are going to be looking at the book of Ruth, and we're going to see a theme that comes out that will tie in directly with the fact that we are celebrating Easter Sunday this morning. If Judges is the march down into the depths for the nation of Israel, as things get worse and worse in the nation of Israel, Ruth, the book that immediately follows Judges, is the first steps back. It's the first steps back up on the other side, which is why we're putting aside the sermon we're going to do this week on Easter Sunday. We'll do that in a couple weeks. We're going to do Ruth for a little bit more happy Easter message. Because by way of review, what we have seen so far in Judges, and actually some of Joshua as well, is that Israel is living in this period of time where they have been commanded to conquer the land. And in that process, there were things that were what God called devoted to destruction. And what he said was that devoted to destruction was a last case scenario. First option given to people in the land as Israel came in to conquer the land was to choose God. And if the people in the land chose God, chose to become proselyte Jews, chose to join the nation of Israel, they were actually adopted into the people of Israel to live as Israelites. We saw this in Joshua with the story of Rahab, the one who took in the spies, and chose God, chose to follow the God of Israel. She became a part, her and her whole family became a part of the nation of Israel, and they were spared the destruction that came on the rest of the city of Jericho. We saw that one of the things that has happened continually through the book of Judges is that the people rebel against God. And that the two things that we've seen so far that were signs that the people rebelling against God was idol worship and intermarrying with the people in the land, because these people were devoted for destruction. If they were unwilling to choose to follow God, they were to have nothing to do with them. They were either to be put out of the land or devoted to destruction. So God uses this through the book of Judges to show that the people of Israel were choosing to disobey his commands if they intermarried with the people in the land of Canaan. This book of Ruth, we're going to see some of these things come out because likely they have the same author. Either the same group of scholars who are getting together, combining the stories of Israel, or the more traditional view that I hold to, that this is written by Samuel, the one who is writing down the history of Israel, looking forward to the period of kings, which is going to come next, and the other books written by Samuel. And it's meant to be this bridge. It likely takes place in the last third of the book of Judges. It doesn't give us that perfectly laid out timeline, but we do know that it happens within 3 to 4 generations of King David. So we know roughly the time period that this takes place, and you'll see why as we move through the book. But Ruth chapter 1 starts with this. Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, they went down, remember in first part of the chapter, they went down to the land of Moab. This would have been leaving Israel, leaving the place where they grew up in Bethlehem, and they went down to the land of Moab. And once there, Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died. And she was left with 2 sons. And these took Moabite wives. The name of one was Orpah, and the name of the other, Ruth. And they lived about 10 years. And both Mahlon, okay, I guess it comes up a second time, and Chilion died. So that the woman was left without her 2 sons and her husband. See, what we see here, and it'll be completed here in a second, is actually in the first 6 verses of Ruth, we see this miniature representing of the circle of apostasy that we talked about back in Judges. See, Naomi and her husband Elimelech are living in Israel. They choose to leave Israel. They choose to leave the land where they were worshiping God and go down to the Canaanite village of Moab, the place where the Moabites live. They leave God and go away. And then their children, their 2 sons, intermarry with, this is the sign of Israel's disobedience, Moabite women. And as a result, they, the same way Israel does in the book of Judges, they end up losing everything. Elimelech dies. Their sons die. And Naomi is left with these 2 Moabite daughter-in-laws and nothing to her name. And then she arose with her daughters-in-law to return to the country of Moab. From the country of Moab. For she had heard in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited his people and given them food. Remember, as this is taking place in the time of the judges, the nation of Israel were going through highs and lows based on their level of obedience. So there was a famine when they left, and now God has visited them and given them food. So this Israel is now on one of its high points. They have chosen to return to God. They're being obedient. This is likely the time that God would have raised up a judge who was leading them to prosperity. In the same way, Naomi, with her 2 daughters-in-law, decide, now we are going to return to Israel. We are going to return to our God. And as a result, they start this walk back to where God wanted them to be. And God starts blessing. And the rest of this book, like the way God raises up judges in the book of Judges, is about God restoring Naomi and her family back to where he wanted them to be in the first place based on obedience. So it's just this little miniature picture of the circle of apostasy that we see all through the book of Judges. And the Lord visits his people and gives them food. So they're returning. But Naomi says to her 2 daughters-in-law, go, return each of you to your mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me, their father-in-law and their husbands. The Lord grant that you may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband. So she wishes them well, sends them on their way, tells them to go find new husbands, gives them her blessing. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And she said, see, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and her gods. Orpah chooses to go back to the Moabite gods and serve the Moabite gods. Return after your sister-in-law. But Ruth says, do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people will be my people, and your God may be my God. A lot of sermons have been preached about Ruth's loyalty to Naomi, and it is great. It is great to see her loyalty to a mother-in-law that she owes nothing to. But I think the more significant portion of this verse is that last part. Because it's here that Ruth makes the same decision that Rahab made, that I am going to choose to change from the gods I grew up worshiping, the gods of Moab, the gods of my people, and I'm going to reject those idols, and instead, I am going to follow the God of Israel. And in so doing, Ruth changes the course of everything else that comes in Israel's history. The same way that when Rahab made that decision, God incorporates her into the story in an incredible way. Ruth makes the decision to forsake her gods and choose to follow the one true God of Israel, and God comes down in an incredible way into the story of Ruth and inserts Ruth into the story of Israel in a truly amazing way. I think this is the decision point for Ruth. Now, Naomi had a relative of her husband's. We're in chapter 2 now. Now, Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And here we see the entry of our hero. Now, Ruth is the title character, right? It is definitely Ruth's story. It's Ruth from beginning to end. But when you're looking for the hero in an Old Testament story, what you're looking for is the one who looks the most like Jesus, right? It's the one that when we look back, we go, oh, I see what you were doing. They didn't realize it at the time, but now looking back, having encountered Jesus, having encountered the cross, knowing what Jesus is going to do, when we look back at the Old Testament, we can see what God had been doing all along. And when you look for that hero in the Old Testament, so often it is the one who looks the most like Jesus. And in the book of Ruth, while it's her story, while she's the protagonist, Boaz, he's the hero. He is introduced immediately as a worthy man, a man of worth. He is from the same clan of Elimelech, which is going to be incredibly significant in Ruth's story. And Ruth, the Moabite, said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor." Now, I wanted to pause here because gleaning is not necessarily a custom that we are acquainted with today. Gleaning was something that was actually built into the law of Israel. As you study the Old Testament books, the Old Testament laws, this is something that they were instructed to do. It was a form of welfare in the nation of Israel. When a person went out to harvest their field, if they planted a field of grain, of wheat, of anything like that, what they were instructed is when they went out to harvest, they were to harvest most of the grain, but not all of the grain. In fact, they were instructed that on each of the four corners, they were to leave a patch of grain unharvested. And what this was for is that, so that if there was anybody in the land who had fallen on misfortune, who was unable to support themselves, if they were able to go and work, they could actually have something that they did not plant, they did not cultivate, they did not grow. But if they were willing to go do the work of harvest, they could provide for themselves off the gleanings, the corners of a Israelite field. This would be for sojourners in the land, anybody coming from outside the land, and any Jewish person who had just fallen on hard times and could not provide for themselves. This is actually a cultural tradition that has lasted even to today. If you ever go to an Orthodox Jew's house, if they have a yard, you will find that a Orthodox Jew will still leave the corners of their yard unmowed. When they go out to mow their yard, they will mow most of their yard and not mow the corners. Not that that is harvestable grain at any point, but it is still a hearkening back to this tradition, the idea that they are not to harvest the entirety. They are not supposed to cut the entirety of their field. They will still leave the corners uncut for this reason. So Ruth says, I'm going to go to the field and I am going to glean because her and her mother-in-law, they have nothing. They're destitute. Then Boaz says to his young man who is in charge of the reapers, whose young woman is this? He sees her. He's like, who is this? And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, she is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. Then Boaz said to Ruth, now, listen, my daughter, do not go glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink with what the young man, what the young men have drawn. See, as Ruth is gleaning in this field, as she's taking from the corners, she likely would have had to go to multiple fields to get enough food for her and her mother-in-law, because she would not have been the only one gleaning. It would have had to be shared, etc. But as Boaz sees this taking place, Boaz has compassion. Boaz wants to help Ruth. He understands the situation that she is in. So what he tells her is that she should stay with the young women of his household. This likely would have been his servants, his slaves, and likely his own daughters, who would have been out keeping the field. And he says, stay close to them, be with them so that you're not out there on your own. And I've instructed my young men to not bother you. They're not going to mess with you. You can be out there. You can have safety in my field. And when the sun's beaten down and things are getting hard, you should drink what these young men have drawn out of the well so you don't have to worry about going to the well for yourself. Boaz is showing compassion and kindness. This is to show the character of Boaz. Because see, again, Boaz is being laid out here as a man who was full of honor. These were all things that would have been expected of a good man, of a worthy man in the nation of Israel, that they treat sojourners with kindness. Outsiders were actually welcome in the nation of Israel because Israel was commanded to be a beacon, a sign to the nations around them of what a God-honoring, God-fearing nation should look like. So outsiders were welcome to come in and see how Israel lived, and they were to live differently, and that's exactly what Boaz is doing here. He's living differently. He's treating this outsider, this Moabite woman, with kindness and compassion. And then she fell on her face, this is Ruth, bowing to the ground and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner?" Ruth, having grown up in a Moabite land, would not have been used to seeing people treat outsiders this way. In many of the surrounding nations, Moab included, foreigners would not have been welcome. They would not have been treated kindly. And if they were destitute, they would have been put out. They would have been sold into slavery. They would have been treated cruelly. So Ruth doesn't understand why she is getting this kindness from Boaz. She says, "Why should you take notice of me since I am a foreigner?" And Boaz tells her, All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me. And how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. And look where he gives the credit here. He says, "The Lord repay you for what you have done. And a full reward be given to you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Boaz says, "Look, I noticed what you did for your mother-in-law. I noticed the good things that you have done. I've noticed the fact that you chose to leave your land. You chose to leave your God, come to Israel, and worship the one true God, to be in Naomi's household, to be a part of our nation." He says, "So it's not what I'm doing for you. It's not what my young men, my young ladies are doing for you. This is the Lord working in your life. This is the Lord giving you a reward, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Grab that phrase, because we're going to see it again here in a second. This, "under whose wings you have come to take refuge." This is, he's saying, it is God who is repaying you. It is God who is protecting you based on your decision to follow. And when she rose to glean, Boaz instructed the young men, saying, "Let her glean, even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her." She's allowed to go in and glean, take a harvest from not just the corners, but even right in the field itself, right amongst the sheaves, even after they've harvested it together, she's allowed to take it out of their harvest. He says, "And don't reproach her. Also, pull out some from the bundles for her and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her." Boaz is doubling down on this. Not only is he going to let her glean in peace, but he is actually going to take some of his harvest and give it to her. He is lavishing his riches upon Ruth. And he's telling the men to not give her a hard time about it. Her mother-in-law, when she gets home, she has way more than her mother-in-law ever would have expected her to be able to glean in a single day. And when her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned, she also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. So after Boaz had fed Ruth. Ruth had leftovers, food that she brought home. So not just the gleanings, but also actual prepared food. And her mother-in-law says to her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you go that this happened? Where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you. Blessed be the person who treated you with such kindness." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz." And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed by the Lord whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." Naomi and Ruth, her dead husband and sons. And Naomi also said to her, "The man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers." And here comes up our theme word for this morning, the idea of a redeemer. This is an Israelite tradition that existed whereby a woman who lost her husband would have been in a bad position in this day and time. At this period of time, if a woman was married and childless and her husband passed away, there were not many options left to her. So what God actually did was build into the law of Israel a protection for someone who could not protect themselves, this widow who was childless. And what God built in was that if a woman was left childless and widowed, the closest next of kin, the closest male relative of the man who died, should take her as his wife and give her a child. And that child would not be his, but it would be hers. And that she would have an heir to protect her, to care for her, to provide for her moving forward. God built this protection right into the law of Israel. That man who would do this for that woman was called a redeemer, someone who would do this on her behalf. In fact, the full term would be a kinsman redeemer because it had to be someone inside the family of that brother. And what Naomi is saying is this Boaz, he is one of the relatives, which we saw because he was from the tribe of Elimelech, that could do this for Ruth. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not seek rest for you, that it may be well with you? Is not Boaz our relative with whose young women you were? See, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Wash, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your cloak and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. But when he lies down, observe the place where he lies, then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do." There has been a lot of speculation around this section of the story of Ruth. We are in chapter 3, by the way. What we see is this is not a traditional Jewish tradition. We do not see this idea of a proposal coming up in Jewish tradition anywhere. There is some speculation it is likely a Moabite tradition, something that Naomi would have picked up in her time in Moab, something that Ruth would have been familiar with. Or it is just shrewd strategy, a gentle way to wake someone up so that they don't get startled, uncover their feet. As their feet get cold, they gradually wake up. One of those two likely, I tend to land on this is a Moabite tradition of proposal. But the idea is she tells Ruth, go, pretty yourself up, wash, anoint yourself, get all beautified, and then go down to the threshing floor, go down to where he is, uncover his feet, make your intentions known. We'll leave it there. And when he wakes up, he'll do whatever he wants to do. At midnight, the man was startled and turned over, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. And he said, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your servant." And here's this phrase again. "Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer." God, he has already used this phrase to talk about how God has protected her. Now she is propositioning him that she wants him to protect her as well. "Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer." And he says, "May you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. You have made this last kindness greater than the first, in that you have not gone after young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you what you ask, for all my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman." So he wakes up, he praises her, he recognizes the fact that she is actually choosing to do this the right way. She is going to a kinsman redeemer to buy her back, even though he is older than the men who would be traditionally part of her life. She is choosing to to follow Israelite traditions. And he says, as a result, I will do this for you. I will redeem you. But remember, Boaz is introduced as a worthy man. He has to do this the right way. If he doesn't do it the right way, he will break this story. So that's exactly what he does. He says, and now it is true that I am a redeemer. He's going to do it for her because he is a redeemer, but there is a redeemer nearer than I. Remain tonight, and in the morning, if he will redeem you, good, let him do it. We're going to do things the right way. But if he is not willing to redeem you, then as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Lie down until the morning. So what he's saying is, I know Jewish custom, I know Jewish tradition. There is somebody who is a closer relative who should be the first one to have the option to fulfill the law and take you into his household. If we're going to do this the right way, we have to at least let him know and let him make the decision. And Boaz, being a worthy man who wants to do this God's way, not his own, chooses to do it that way. Now, Boaz had gone up to the gate. We're in chapter 4 now. And sat down there, and behold, the Redeemer of whom Boaz had spoken comes by. So the one who has a greater claim comes by the gate, and Boaz has this interaction with him. He says to the Redeemer, Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, is selling a parcel of land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. So he's like, Naomi, she went away, her husband died, she's back, she's got this land, she can't own the land herself, so she's selling it. Do you want it? He says, so I thought I would tell you and say, buy it in the presence of those sitting here and the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not, tell me, that I may know, for there is no one besides you to redeem it, and I come after you. And he said, I will redeem it. This guy had the first right to take Naomi's land, to redeem Naomi's land, and he is excited. He's like, yeah, I want more land. Yes, I want more riches. I'm totally going to take this for myself. I'm going to redeem it. So Boaz says to him, and the day that you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the widow of the dead, in order to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance. He's like, you can have the field. It will be great, but you also get Ruth. When you get Ruth, your job as the Redeemer is to give her a child who will not be yours, who will not inherit your wealth, who will take care of her, and actually will inherit a portion of your wealth, but will not be your child, will take Elimelech's name, he'll be Elimelech's heir, and he will take a piece of your inheritance and be Ruth's child. And the Redeemer goes, oh, never mind. Says, I don't want to do that. I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I impair my own inheritance, lest I take something from my own kids to give to a child that won't be counted as mine. He says, take my right of redemption for yourself, for I cannot redeem it. He says, I am unwilling to do the second part. So it's all you, Boaz. So Boaz takes Ruth, and she became his wife. And he went into her, and the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. And at this point in the story of Ruth, God has restored Ruth to where she was meant to be from the very beginning. And the women said to Naomi, blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a redeemer. And may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be your restorer of life, a nourisher of your old age, for your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is more to you than 7 sons, has given birth to him. God doesn't just restore Ruth, he restores Naomi, and he brings joy back into their life, and he gives them a son. And this is wonderful to see the blessings that God has given them. And then, right at the end of the book, we see this. And they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse. He was the father of David. So track the progression of this book. Naomi leaves Israel. Naomi loses everything. Comes back with 2 daughters-in-laws. One of them leaves and goes back. The other one chooses to follow God. The one who chooses to follow God is redeemed by this man, Boaz. Through the redemption of Boaz, through his kindness, his compassion, his willingness to sacrifice of himself to take her into his household, his home, she ends up giving birth to Obed. She goes from being an outsider, a foreigner, someone who had no right to anything in the land of Israel, to being the great-grandmother of the king of Israel, the greatest king Israel ever saw. She goes from foreigner, outsider, to royal family because of this interaction with Boaz. She goes from as far from God as she could be to being the great-grandmother of the man after God's own heart, the king. The king that Israel had longed for, the one who brought in prosperity from foreigner to royal family. And that is where the book of Ruth intersects with Easter. Right? Right here in this last part. Because in the same way that Boaz was able to redeem Ruth, we have a redeemer. Galatians 4 says, but when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth his son, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem those that were under the law, so that we might receive adoption as sons. We were under a law that was foreign. We were under a law that was oppressive. We were the foreigners. We were the ones who had fallen short of the glory of God, who were sentenced to death. Romans 3, Romans 6. But Jesus comes out of heaven. He dies on our behalf. He sheds his blood for us and redeems us, takes us into his family, adopts us as sons, adopts us as daughters, brings us into the royal family of God. Ephesians 1 says, in him we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of our trespasses according to the riches of his grace, which he lavished upon us in all wisdom and insight. He says that Jesus, through the shedding of his blood, cared for our sins. He covered our sins and redeemed us to himself. He lavished upon us riches from his grace. He didn't just have us glean around the outside of his fields. He instead took bunches of the sheaves and just threw them upon us, giving us the gifts, the riches of his grace. He says he has delivered us from the domain of darkness and transferred us into the kingdom of his beloved Son, in whom we have redemption. We have the forgiveness of our sins. Because of what Jesus did, his death, burial, and what we are celebrating today on Easter, his resurrection from the dead, because of what Jesus did, we have been transferred from the kingdom of Moab to the family of the king, from the kingdom of darkness, of sin, of wrongdoing. We have been transferred into the king's family. The one who redeemed us, brought us in, brought us close, and cared for our sins. So one day we are looking forward to in Revelation, says that we people will sing a new song, saying, you are worthy to take the scroll. They're singing to Jesus here. It says, and to open its seals. Why is he worthy? Because he was the one who was slain. And he redeemed us to God by his blood, out of every tribe, every tongue, every people and nation, and have made us kings and priests to our God, and we shall reign on the earth. He has come and found us in every tribe, every nation, every outside foreign place that we were. He has come and found us and redeemed us. He died for us, and he made us whole. He made us kings. He made us royalty when all we deserved was darkness. And that's our so what. It's this idea that Jesus found us when we were lost, when we were without hope, when we were destitute the same as Naomi and Ruth. Jesus found us and found value in us. Jesus then pays the price to redeem us to himself. He was willing to do what was necessary to pay on our behalf the price that was owed to God, to redeem us to himself, to bring us into his family. And as a result, he not only redeemed us, but made us part of his royal family. I love the book of Ruth. And seeing it in the light of Judges has just added a level of richness for me. But even more than seeing Boaz as this great redeemer hero, when I look at Jesus and what Jesus has done to redeem us, and what Jesus is offering us, it just drives me all the more to say, please don't send me back to my previous land. Instead, Jesus, let me walk with you. Let your people be my people. Let your God be my God. I want in. And Jesus is offering that to you today. If you have never made the decision to follow Jesus, if you've never made the decision to say, yes, Jesus, I'm all in, don't wait another day. If you want to talk to somebody about that, I'm available. Pat's available. Our other service leaders, Audrey, Scott, they're available. Any of our deacons, any of our trustees, we would all love to talk to you. You do not need to go through us. You can go to Jesus yourself. But if you want someone to talk to, we are available to you. But don't wait. He has already died. He has already risen from the dead. He has already done everything necessary to make you right with God. And now he's offering to you free of charge. Make today the day. Father, I thank you. I thank you that thousands of years ago, you were already putting things in place that would cause us to take time, celebrate, remember, rejoice, worship. Because you are a great God who has acted in incredible ways on our behalf. God, I pray that as we walk out of here today, each and every one of us would rededicate our hearts, our lives, to following you, to doing what you've called us to do, and to rejoicing together. Father, as we go back to singing our praise, Father, as we continue to worship through song, I pray that it would just instill in us again this awe, this wonder at how great you are, how good you are. As we rejoice, as we smile, as we laugh, as we pound on pews, as we do all the things we do to express our love for you, I pray that it would be all about you. In your son's name, amen.